Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeed.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, November 11th, 2007, and this is show number 120. Last week I had a fun-filled show, and I guess I got a little out of control because listener Sean pointed out that I promised a wiretap studio review, and it wasn't actually ever in the show. I ran out of time, so I actually cut it from last week's show. But I promised him it's in this week's show. Well, Sean also asked some good questions in his email. Here's what he said. Allison, great show. I like that part. I found you through Victor Cahiao of the Typical Mac User podcast, who I found through Ken Ray on iTunes. I still have to do the homework for posting a review, but I'll be sure to do that after this. Good job, Sean. Anyhow, I remember you mentioning a great way to track your processor performance. What application is that and where can I get it? I also wanted to ask you what you think about the program Clean Sweep for cleaning up your system, if you have any insight on that. Well, Sean, I use menu meters to measure my processors from Raging Menace at RagingMenace.com. It was one of the top 20 applications I loaded after reloading Leopard. I looked around for Clean Sweep to see if I could chat about that, but I couldn't find it anywhere. So maybe you could send me some information on it and let me know what it's all about. I'm guessing it's something to clean up all the slop that gets left around when you do a lot of messing around for people like me. Sean went on to say, I plan to take the plunge next week and pick up and install Leopard. I listened to you, Victor, and Adam on the MacCast about recommendations, and I'm almost overwhelmed by the configurations one can take. I can't even remember what I did when I upgraded to Tiger. Thanks for a great show, and I'll be passing on your subscription to a couple new switchers I've helped to convert last week who are getting an iMac and a MacBook Pro. Keep up the good work. Well, it sounds like Sean is taking his homework assignments very seriously. Let him be a role model for you all. I told Sean to do as I say, not as I do, and to learn from my mistakes. Dirty install just sounds like fun. In the long run, it's not nearly as much fun as it sounds. Things have been going much better, but not flawlessly, since I did an erase and install. Oddly, one of the things giving me the most trouble is Microsoft Office. Word is taking like 3 minutes to launch, and that's when it's cached because I already opened it that day. I tried to run the updater, and it said I already had it on or I had a newer version or something, so I'm not quite sure what's going on there. And occasionally, I am still having trouble with applications locking up in Leopard. One thing I hate is when you do a force quit to try to get out of it, brings up a little helpful window saying, it appears this application unexpectedly quit. Would you like me to report that? What's unexpectedly quitting because I'm force quitting it? I've started sending them to Apple anyway just to irritate them, so that'll be fun. Well, let me know, Sean, how your installation works. I'll be curious to see what you decide and hear about it. Well, I also did want to tell you about what Sean does for a living, by the way. He's an amazing Native American artist. I spent a lot of time just looking at his work, so you should go check it out at qualciusstudio.com. Needless to say, I've got a link in the show notes, so you don't have to rely on my pronunciation. Well, speaking of homework assignments, many more of you ran out to the iTunes store and put up reviews, and they're so much fun to read. Vintage Geek pointed out one of his favorite episodes was when I poured a glass of wine on my MacBook Pro. Yeah, that was classic, wasn't it? Yikes. Lockman1234 says, I make the commute to work easier. Boy, I'm glad I can help out with that. Qualcius, which I suspect might be Sean, titled his review, Wax On. I love that. I think there's a theme coming out here because Jimmy Lee from Indie Radio Chattanooga titled his review, Most Excellent Car Care Show. And he said, if you want to know everything about car care, then this show is for you, from mechanics to waxing, with a little bit of tech show thrown in. I like that one. Donald said some wonderful things about how I'm not smug like some Mac fanatics. That's nice to hear, too. I try not to be too smug, but I'm afraid it does come out sometimes. Debbie T. and Elliot M. wrote lovely things about it, too. I really enjoyed that. I think one of my favorites was from Kangamoo, and I suspect this might be Nutball James' poor carpool partner, because she titled hers, It's Great. James Made Me Listen. She said that even though it can be a bit frightening to drive with him, the bright point is that she gets to listen to the No Silicast. Anyway, I can't thank all of you enough for taking the time to write silly and serious reviews on iTunes. It really is helping me out. Tim had a fun idea. He decided to do a review of Art Text, but rather than using his own voice to record, he had the new Leopard voice Alex record it for him. Alex's voice is really amazing, but the cadence is a little bit off from normal speech. Luckily, the pronunciation is really, really good. Gets a little tedious when he reads URLs, but other than that, I think it's a really cool way to do a review. So here's Tim, or should I say Alex's, review.
Allison, I had a problem. I maintain a website and am often required or asked to make pretty things for the website and occasionally do the same for work. Usually, this entails text and graphics, but a lot of the time it is just text. I had been in the habit of using my image editor. I use Canvas X to create the prettified text. This can take hours to get it just right. Though powerful, it is overkill, and just not as easy or effective as I had liked. I don't remember where I first heard of Art Text from Belight Software, http://www.belightsoft.com/products/arttext/overview.php, but I visited their site and viewed a nicely done video tutorial that described many of the features available in the program. The one simple feature the video sold me on was simply the ability to fill a text with the contents of an image. More on that later. Art Text is kinda pricey, well above your $30-ish limit, Allison, at $39.95, but it is what I wanted. I even pitched another $10 for the set of 50 additional Bitstream fonts found in the retail version, $49.95. Not found in the standard version. There is a free download available, and I assume it is time limited after some manner. I have had hours of fun just discovering all its capabilities and a few of its flaws. I really like the way you can manipulate text from their transformation window. You can bend text around and over on itself with ease, all while seeing the fully rendered view of the text. There are more than a dozen built-in transforms that can be done, and most of those have sliders that add further capabilities and distortions. Very powerful. Art Text lets you pick, using Mac standard color pickers, the colors for your text, shadows and glows of simple text. Even cooler is the extensive set of preset, built-in color settings. These material settings permit the creation of really fancy text, like metal, glass, plastic with various levels of reflectivity and shininess. Very cool. But cooler still is the included editor. I don't think it was mentioned in the tutorial. That lets you create and add your very own materials text fills. They even give you a little playground called My Materials where you can try all kinds of weird stuff. Just go into the sandbox and double click on one of the samples and start adding color, lighting colors, and save it. I don't want to fail point out that the tool allows customized kerning and spacing of letters and text. It also comes with a bunch of symbols that you can fill as you like. It even lets you make your own symbols, a logo perhaps. Just create them in some other program and load them into Art Text for filling and manipulating as you see fit. As I said earlier, Art Text is not without some flaws and shortcomings. The feature I was thrilled with, Image Fill Text, works as expected, almost. You have to take more care with the image than I had hoped. Rather than float text over a visible image to select just the right part of an image to put in the text, it just automatically fills your text from the middle of the image. You don't get to see the image or adjust it in any way. I hope that in some future version, this will be fixed to be more powerful. I did have issues with putting the text on the clipboard for pasting into other apps. Some of the visual interfaces seemed spotty, like one time the really necessary bound and box will appear, so you can set the area around your text, and sometimes it won't. If it doesn't, it puts the entire editing image window into the clipboard or exported image. Easily fixed elsewhere, but a frustration, I had an issue with transparency to the clipboard as well that was inconsistent. I would do font selection, font browsing slightly different than they chose to do it. I sent Belite a couple of bug reports, and my list of featured requests. You can do that when you pay big bucks for it, right? Leonard responded for clarification and an admission that one feature, now, has a problem and that they were working the issue. Well, Allison, I wanted to let you and your NoSilicast listeners know about this fine little art text. Maybe the tutorial will sell a few more copies. And Al, you would love the way they flip the various menus around in the app to change capabilities or features. This is a great effort. I include the most basic rendition of your Red NoSilicast text, so you may have a sample. Thanks for a great podcast. Keep up the good work. Tim.
Hey, Tim. Thanks. That was really cool. Just for everybody else's information, since he had to type this out for Alex to be able to read it for us, everything he talked about is in the show notes, so you can get the links from there. Thanks for taking the time to write that up. I think it was a neat idea to have Alex do all the hard part. Hey, I wonder if I could get away with that for the show. Probably not. Well, are you tired of hearing me sing the praises of Honda Bob? I mean, is the guy flawless or what? Well, I'm not tired of talking about it. Just this week, I was happily driving my car when I got this strange warning up on my display. It blathered something about message A12. Gee, that's really helpful, thanks. And it told me to get service soon. I envisioned all kinds of doom oncoming, and, you know, if I'd called the dealer or taken it in, I'm sure they would have made big frowny faces and claimed I needed new valves on my whatchamajig or something. But instead, of course, I called Honda Bob. He looked it up and told me it was a simple oil change request, and that Steve could do it just fine, and that he had taught Steve how to reset the alert on the car. Most people would prefer Honda Bob actually came out and did the service for them, and he's more than willing to do that, but he knows us, and he knows Steve doesn't mind doing these minor services, so he would never try to push his service on us. That's the thing, you know, he'll offer you what you want, what you need, and no more. No pressure. That's what you get with Honda Bob, an honest mechanic. How many people can say they have an honest mechanic? I mean, really? Well, if you drive a Honda or an Acura and you live in the LA or Orange County area, then give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321 or shoot him an email at hdabob@aol.com. You can also visit his informative website at hdabob.com to learn more about how cars work, even if they're not Hondas. H.J. Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Back on show number 104 of the NoSilicast, I did a fly-off between Audio Hijack Pro and Wiretap Pro. I really liked both programs, and while Audio Hijack Pro was much more capable, Wiretap Pro was less expensive. Wiretap did a fine job of recording audio, but it picked up everything coming out of the sound card and couldn't isolate just one application. So, for example, if you're recording a Skype conversation, and let's say you forgot to shut off your email, like we all do, that ding would come in to the recording on Wiretap Pro. While on Audio Hijack Pro, you could focus the recording to just one application. Audio Hijack Pro also allowed timed and scheduled recordings. Well, Ambrosia Software at ambrosiasw.com just announced a new product called Wiretap Studio. So I thought it would be interesting to see what advances they've made in their product. According to their site, you can record the discrete audio output from any application, as well as system audio or record audio input from any microphone, line in, or audio input hardware. They talk about ease of effort to export to different devices like remote servers, cell phones, iPods, iDisk, with a simple click and drag. They also say it's a great tool for podcasting and recording of Skype and iChat conversations. Sounds like something we need. It also looks like they've added in a lossless audio editing capability that looks pretty interesting and added scheduled recordings, just like we wanted them to. Well, to start with, I was glad to see that they had maintained their very small and intuitive controller. Instead of a big, heavy interface with all these menus and all this stuff, you pretty much just see record, pause, and stop, along with a few other little display items. Now they've enhanced it without significant clutter to allow you to change easily into the format in which you want to record, so you can set MP3 or AAC or AIFF. And also on the fly, you can change what audio source you're going to record. Skype, iChat, iTunes, whatever. From that same tiny little pull-down, you can also change your audio device from the built-in mic to an external mic, for example. You absolutely now can record just one application at a time, leaving those pesky dings out of your recording of that rock superstar you finally got to agree to an interview. Well, I decided to do a test recording, and I was delighted with what popped up when I said to stop. I had a beautiful waveform of my recording with a whole bunch of editing tools at my disposal. Even if you're not crazy about scrubbing audio, hey, I don't do it too much. I'm sure you've noticed if you've listened to my podcast. Anyway, it's great to be able to see the waveform so you can tell where to cut out that one thing you didn't like. You can also view the file format and options next to the waveform and add tags like title, artist, all that kind of stuff. Well, back on the waveform view, there's all kinds of crazy things you can do to the recording, like adding filters, removing hum and hiss, cropping, splitting, looping, and scrubbing. This is pretty advanced stuff, but more and more people are getting into audio editing, so I think this is terrific to have such a great interface. It's so simple and clean, that's the main thing. And one thing I couldn't quite figure out was when you tell it to remove hiss or hum, you get some controls for things like cutoff frequencies and all that kind of stuff, but there's no, like, apply button. I couldn't actually figure out how to get those features to go. I suppose if I read the manual or something, I could figure it out, but, you know, that's not going to happen. Well, when you're editing audio, there's two different things you really want, and most programs seem to give you one or the other. You want to be able to cut out a section and then, like, re-record that little space, or you want to cut out the section and have the audio on either side kind of pull together to close up the gap. Wiretap Studio has both options. There's buttons on the waveform view. One cuts it and leaves a gap. One cuts it and squashes it together. I also like the way you could stretch the entire window vertically and horizontally so you could enlarge the area of the waveform to really see what you're doing. Of course, the zoom control helps you with that too. Probably the most intriguing feature of Wiretap Studio is the live preview. With this feature, you can change your recording settings on the fly to see what it's going to sound like. You can switch between MP3 and AAC, you can change the bit rate, sample rate, quality level, and all kinds of things. Well, while you're doing this, you're making those adjustments, you can be judging the sound quality, but you can also watch how much disk space it's going to take up per minute, so you can make that trade-off as well. That's a really amazing feature. I tested out the recording capabilities of Wiretap Studio on a Skype call with Bart. It worked beautifully. After recording, I could look at the waveform, and it even showed our two voices in two different colors. Then the best part, I clicked on the library icon on the controller, and I was shown a lovely list of all my recordings I had made, along with some really obvious icon buttons below to allow me to send to local drive, server, iDisk, email, Bluetooth, or iTunes. I happened to want to share the recording with Bart, so it was just trivial to click that button to iDisk, and I was good to go. You could not possibly ask for a better interface on that part. So, you're asking yourself, what does this amazing tool cost? Well, it's $69 if you don't own any of the previous versions, or $30 to upgrade from Wiretap Pro. Get this, though, they also allow cross-grades, so you can pay just $30 if you own Rogue Amoeba's Audio Hijack Pro or their Fission Lossless Audio Editor. It's kind of good now. It's like there's a low, medium, and high solution with Wiretap Pro, Audio Hijack Pro, and then Wiretap Studio. There's one for every budget. Ambrosia Software makes outstanding products like SnapC Pro that I use all the time, and it looks like they've hit another high mark on Wiretap Studio. At $69, it is high on the high end of shareware, but if you want a lot of flexibility in editing and the ability to figure out the best format ahead of the recording, I think that's worth the money. Len Chernoff wrote in a great letter to me. He said, "Hi, Allison. Is there a 12-step program for me? I'm a sales rep and I have a lot of windshield time. My iPod is loaded with all of your past casts. Great info and great entertainment." Well, I explained to Len that maybe he could cut the NoSilicast with some MacReview cast. Perhaps that would help. I also pointed out that until he works his way through all, 117 of the shows from before he started listening, we don't have to worry about withdrawals for him. He also sent in a link to an interesting website slash tool that lets you create really entertaining and original videos out of your still photos. I decided to give it a try. It's called Animoto from Animoto.com. First, you create a login. Very simple. Then you have a choice of making a short film or a long film, short being defined as less than 30 seconds. Well, now it's time to choose a set of photos. There was a video I was supposed to watch that probably told me things like, I don't know, how many photos I could put in the video, but I was too lazy to watch it. So instead, I uploaded 51 high-resolution photos. Took quite a while for them to upload. Guess I could have started with a smaller sample. Once they were all uploaded, it gave me a warning that some of my pictures might be cut off because I had too many, but I decided to barrel ahead and see what would happen. Once my pictures were uploaded and converted, there was a big number 2 that said, pick song next. You can upload music from your own computer or use their library of indie music bands. That sounded like more fun, so I selected Letters Faded by The Swear. Then the final step came up, which was simply to create the video. I didn't really know what to expect, and clearly watching the instructional video would have been helpful. But after waiting for all of those files to upload, it only had time in 30 seconds to use about 15 of them. I guess I haven't really explained what Animoto actually does with the photos, and that's because it's really hard to explain. Turns out they chop your pictures up, scramble them side to side and up and down, and flip them around and swirl them, and it's all very random. But when it's done, it's really, really cool. After my rather botched attempt with too many photos, I decided to handpick just 15 videos for the short version. Unfortunately, right then the site broke for me. I couldn't upload any pictures. This was like 3 weeks ago, and I had this review like 3/4 written. I was trying to think I might have done something to my system right around then. I'd upgraded to Leopard right then. Maybe that could be the problem. Well, I wrote to the Animoto guys, and Jason wrote back right away, telling me that we're all Mac heads here, dude, so we don't have our Leopard licenses yet. It's supposed to be coming in the mail, but we'll jump right on the problem. Well, time went by, and I've kept moving the review forward by a week or two, and I was just thinking maybe they'd forgotten about me when I got a letter from Nate at Animoto telling me they had figured it out. It turns out it's an Adobe Flash Player issue that's broken in Leopard. Well, this turned out to be awesome news because there was a way to fix it, and it was an Adobe link to a pre-release for developers. That's even better than alpha code. Of course I hit the link. I mean, hey, Nate never misled me before, right? Well, anyway, I uploaded 15 pictures from our trip to Cinque Terre in Italy, chose the soundtrack of Pictures in My Head by Household Names, and let it rip. Like I said, it's impossible to explain how cool this is without seeing it, so I embedded the video I made in the show notes so you can see it for yourself. I should mention that after you're done, you can always remix it with picking new music, and then they scramble the pictures in a totally different way. You can also embed into a bunch of specific different blog types and they got a Facebook plugin, all kinds of stuff. Go check it out at animoto.com. Bart sent in a message to all the Mac users on the podcast about both the new firewall built into Leopard as well as the recent Trojan horse out there for the Macintosh. Let's listen and see how worried we should be.
Hi folks, this is Bart from bartbushes.ie, back again on the NoSillaCast. There's been a few stories about OSN security doing the rounds on the blogs and perhaps even the news of late, so I thought I'd just share some of these details with you and try to explain a little what it's all about. Continuing on from the Leopard theme of, well, just about everything for the last few weeks, I'm going to start by talking about the new firewall in OS X Leopard. The first thing to note about this firewall is that it's completely, totally and utterly different from anything that's gone in any previous version of OS X. In Tiger, for example, the firewall used was actually the firewall that comes with BSD called IPFW, which stands for IP Firewall. This was a firewall which basically allowed traffic through or blocked it depending on what port the traffic was coming from or going to. The new firewall is entirely homemade by Apple, it appears to be so anyway. This firewall is based on applications, so the question it asks isn't what port is this traffic going on, but what program is this traffic coming to or going from, and then allow stuff through based on the program rather than based on the port number. Now, there's absolutely nothing wrong with the concepts involved here. In fact, the concept is very good and it's a very sound idea, a simple, sensible way to base your firewall. However, unfortunately, this is a first-generation Apple product, and as such, it's the implementation that's the flaw here, not really the actual concept. There's sort of three main flaws with it, really. The first is that it is still not on by default, and that's really quite unforgivable in this day and age to have any firewall which is not on by default. The second flaw is that the graphical user interface to the firewall doesn't really make it very clear exactly what is and isn't going on. For instance, when you choose an option to block all traffic, that doesn't mean you block all traffic. That actually means you block all traffic except for the traffic for the services you've enabled in the services panel. But it's really not clear about that. Then the third major flaw is that it uses digital signatures as its basis for deciding whether you really are the application you claim you are, which is all very sensible and very sound. But it then goes and inserts this signature into programs that don't have the signature that do want to talk to the net. And if those programs contain code within themselves to make sure that their source code hasn't been meddled with, they're going to see that, oh, my source code has changed because OS X has stuck in the signature that wasn't there before. And then the program is going to decide not to run. That was definitely causing trouble with Skype when Leopard had just come out. I'm not entirely sure if that's been fixed yet. But anyway, you know, a firewall shouldn't go around meddling with programs. That's just not on, really. So, you know, those three flaws are imperfections in the implementation. However, the firewall is still absolutely worth running. It's not perfect, but it's a damn sight better than no firewall at all. So it's not enabled by default. If you upgrade it from Tiger to Leopard, it will have been turned off, even if you had it on Tiger. So make sure you go in and you turn on that firewall right now. Okay, Bart, so how do I actually enable this firewall? Well, you may notice the firewall configuration page has moved places. So you go into System Preferences, and where you used to go into Sharing to talk about the firewall, which was a pretty strange choice in all fairness, they've now made a much more sensible choice. Firewall is now under Security. So you go into Preference pane, go to the Security, and then go to the Firewall tab, and then what you want to do is select the second option from the top, which is Block All Incoming Connections. This sounds as if you're blocking everything. But you're not. What that actually means, although it's very badly written, is block everything except for the stuff that OS X wants to let through. So there you go. That's probably your best choice. Okay, so that's all I'm going to say about the OS X firewall. And I'm going to spend the rest of my time talking about this so-called OS X Trojan that's doing the rounds. Now, people are panicking and all sorts of stuff. Oh my God, viruses for the Mac, blah, 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 blah. Okay, first off, calm down. It's not as bad as you think. The first thing to note is that this is a Trojan. It's not a virus, and it's not a worm. Hang on a sec, Bird. What's the difference? Okay, let me explain. A Trojan is a program which relies... It's a program that masquerades as something it isn't. Think of it like a Trojan horse. So basically, it's a regular program which doesn't exploit any security weaknesses. It basically tricks the user into installing it by telling the user, hello, I'm a such and such, when in fact, it's a something else. Trojans don't spread by themselves. They rely on people to, you know, be fooled. Viruses self-replicate, which is a whole different kettle of fish, and worms, in fact, self-replicate through a network, which is an even more dangerous kettle of fish. So we do not have a virus on the Mac, we do not have a worm on the Mac, we have a Trojan. Okay, what this Trojan is doing is it's sitting on not-so-reputable websites, in fact, pornography sites, and it's pretending to be a codec. And so basically the site says, dear Mr. Person, if you want to see this pornography, you're going to have to download this codec. The person goes, ooh, definitely want to see this. So they download the codec, run the installer. The installer asks them for their administrator username and password. They give the administrator username and password. And then instead of installing a codec, the program installs basically a bit of malware, which replaces your DNS settings so that every time you try to go to a site, it sends you to a different site instead. So it may send you to continued ads for pornography. It may send you to phishing sites. Whatever it's at, it's messing with your DNS settings, so it's not giving you the real answer. So when you type www.paypal.com, you don't connect to the PayPal server. You connect to some different random server. So what's the key point here? The key point is that this is not some sort of automated thing that's going to spread that you're going to catch. This is something that you have to actively install yourself. Not only do you have to install it yourself, you have to give your username and your administrator username and password to this program so it can install. Okay, so really, ultimately, the only weakness in OS X that's being exploited here is the fact that a lot of OS X users think they're immune to security problems, therefore do things that a Windows user wouldn't do in their wildest dreams. So really, the weak point in Mac OS X security is the organic squidgy bit between the keyboard and the chair, and this Trojan exploits exactly that bit. Okay, so what do we need to take away from this? The first thing you need to take away is that the bad guys out there are actively trying to trick OS X users into installing malware onto their computers. The bad guys are targeting Mac OS X. We are no longer living in some little island that no one cares about. The bad guys are after us, so we need to take precautions. There's two ways you can go, and there's upsides and downsides to each way. Basically, you can either choose to rely on your own common sense and your own understanding of computers to keep yourself out of trouble, or you can rely on antivirus software to do it for you. And there's pros and cons to all sides. So first off, if you do go the virus scanner route, you know that all you have to do is you have to keep your virus scanner up to date, and you have to just let it run, and it'll stop you whenever you're about to do something silly. I say, whoa, you really don't want to install that. That's actually a Trojan. That's definitely an upside. It means you don't need to know very much. You don't need to keep yourself abreast of security situations. You can just ignore all this nasty evil people on OS X and let your virus scanner do it for you. There's two flaws with that. One, virus scanners are not perfect, and there's a time lag between when a virus comes out and when the virus definition makes it into your virus scanner. So you're vulnerable for a little window. And if you're going around thinking you're absolutely immune while there's that little window of vulnerability, you're really a prime target. Then there's a second flaw that basically you'd like your computer to be doing work, say, for you. But instead, this virus scanner is going to be taking up memory. It's going to be taking up CPU cycles. It's basically taking resources that you could be doing other things with. So what's the alternative? Well, the alternative involves a different kind of work on your behalf. It involves keeping yourself informed about what's going on with security, and it involves educating yourself enough about how things work so that you can spot something fishy when something fishy is afoot. The only way to really keep yourself informed is to subscribe to RSS feeds and stuff that deal with security and so forth. The US cert page is a good one to subscribe to. It's run by the US government, and any major security issues going around on any platform get posted to on US cert. So if you go there, that's a pretty good way to keep abreast of the big news. So as well as being aware of the big news, you also need to not do anything that's fishy or suspicious or strange. And really, what is fishy or suspicious or strange is something you're just going to have to learn the hard way. There's no golden rule I can say, oh, well, if you never did this and you never did this, then you'll be perfectly safe. Because the reality is, it's not that simple. So the way I look at these things is, if I'm going to install something, I ask myself, do I trust the people who are giving me this software? Is this installing in a way that seems reasonable or sensible for what the software claims to be? And do I really need this? Okay, so the do I really need is probably the easiest question. If it's some sort of screen service, like, well, no, I really don't need this, and you may decide not to bother. Now, do you trust the people giving it to you? If you're on a gambling site, pornography site, a wear site or whatever, do you really trust these people that they're going to give you what they say they're going to give you? I would suggest perhaps you shouldn't. And really, I would only trust software from sites that I would think are reputable. So I tend to trust stuff from places like SourceForge, Mac Update, those kind of places, and stuff that I've heard talked about a lot within sort of the blogosphere. So if I hear Leo Laporte suggest something, and then I hear Victor Cahillao suggest it as well, and then I maybe hear Matt Christensen or Adam Christensen suggest it as well, then I'll say, okay, that sounds like it's legit, and I'll happily install it. Whereas if I come across something on a random website that just tells me, yeah, you want this, I'm going to say, no, I really don't. Then the second thing is, does the installer do something reasonable? If you're installing a simple application, it should not require anything more than a drag-and-drop install. As soon as something on OS X requires more than a drag-and-drop install, that means it's probably poking around in library files and stuff. And you have to ask yourself, do I trust this program to go poking around in my library files? And is it reasonable for something claiming to be, say, a web browser, to be poking around inside my system libraries? And for an awful lot of stuff, the answer is simply no. Remember, stuff as complicated as Skype is a drag-and-drop install. So as soon as I see a package installer instead of a drag-and-drop install, immediately alarm bells go off in my head and I ask myself much more strenuously, really, do I trust this and is this going to do something that I need? Anyway, like I say, there are no hard and fast rules. That is the simple reality. So you either choose to keep yourself up to date and to always be suspicious, always be on your watch, or you choose to run antivirus software in the knowledge that it's not perfect and that it is stealing system resources and perhaps some of your money too. Anyhow, until next time, happy computing.
Thanks, Bart. I really appreciate your knowledge level and how you'll keep it up high enough that we can follow you. Then you dive real deep into a part where we have to concentrate, but we can pay attention that long, and then you bring it back up to where it's a little easier to follow. It kind of really helps me to be able to understand you that way. I think I'm exactly the kind of person who needs to listen to your advice, because I gotta admit, I've been rather cavalier about my Mac over the years. I think I learned from you today not to cower in the corner in fear, but just to be a bit smarter and maybe pay more attention to what I'm installing. I hope someday to make the list of people you list that you trust the applications that they said to install. Okay, that was just a little jealous needling there. But anyway, thanks again for sending that in. Well, I have a special treat for you this week. I interviewed Victor Cajiao of the Typical Mac User podcast. He's a really fun guy with a fantastic style. Unfortunately, the interview ran a half an hour because we were just having such a good time, so I've decided to release it later in the week as a special episode. Victor and I had a great time chatting, so I think you might enjoy it. Well, that's going to wrap things up for a dark, damp, cold November Sunday night. Okay, maybe it's not that cold at 63 degrees Fahrenheit, but hey, I'm in California. That's freezing. Anyway, please keep all the great reviews going on iTunes, and even more important, keep up the great emails and blog comments. I just love to hear from you. Shoot me an email sometime at allison@podfeed.com. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.